Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Kristi Noem has been lauded by conservative-leaning media recently for her handling of the COVID-19 pandemic in South Dakota. At the same time, the governor has been outspoken about her treatment in nationwide media. Meanwhile, Sioux Falls and Minnehaha County law enforcement leaders addressed public concerns about policing this morning in a briefing. How is that conversation progressing in our state? Let's bring in our Dakota political junkies for the day. Joining us from Aberdeen, we have John Schaff. He's professor of political science at Northern State University. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Also on the phone, former South Dakota State Senator Tom Dempster. Tom, good to have you back as well. Tom Dempster, welcome. Thanks for being here. All right, John Schaff, we're going to start with some audio right away because I want to talk about Governor Noem's, her conversations about how the media is treating her. And let's get into this overall narrative of how the virus has been handled by the governor and her staff in South Dakota. But we're going to begin with a quick clip from Breitbart News Daily podcast. The host here is Alex Marlowe. He's doing the interviewing. You'll hear his voice and Governor Kristi Noem's. This interview was posted on June 10th. And here he is asking her about her treatment in the media.
So of all my interests in the news, the number one is the weaponized nature of our establishment media right now. So you are someone who clearly had a successful approach, a approach that bucked the system. We just spoke to last hour Senator McSally, who has this incredible feminist arc, being a pioneering fighter pilot and was someone who is an American hero and is pilloried by the press because she's on the right. Your experience was similar. You were one of the most effective governors, and I rarely read a positive story about how well you were handling it. In fact, I read negative stories, calling you naive, calling you all sorts of names, and every single one of these establishment media figures was proven incorrect.
You know, I served in our state legislature in South Dakota for 4 years, then spent 8 years in Congress, and now I've been governor for not quite 2 years. But, you know, I never had a war with the press. I never had conflict with the press. I certainly at times felt like they were not being fair. But what I've really realized the last 6 to 8 months is how manipulative they can be towards public perception. And I think they do a lot of it through what they choose to cover and what they choose not to cover. They definitely spent a lot of time attacking and, I would say, really sensationalizing items and pulling out facts that worked for an agenda that they were trying to sell, and then rarely covering the good news of what was happening here in South Dakota. And that really is what is disturbing to me. I've spoken quite often about the press and how they are doing a grave disservice to the public by what they're doing by manipulating perceptions out there. And so I've just decided, the last several months that really telling the public about what I've been able to see and observe over the last 6 to 8 months is disturbing, and we should all be concerned about it.
Again, that's Governor Kristi Noem in an interview on Breitbart News Daily podcast here in June. John Schaff, I'm going to ask you first. Her very specific words about the press being manipulative. This has changed. She said this is something new, that she's going to start pointing things out. What has changed, do you think?
Well, certainly her perception has changed. I think, obviously, what she's responding to is a couple things. So she's done various interviews. She was on the Breitbart show that you just played this from. She was on a Fox Business show recently, and the governor's office produced their own video that makes many of the points that she made in those other two interviews. And I think probably what is maybe under her skin a little bit is precisely that you saw states, and I think New York is the classic example, where results were far worse. And now, like, for example, about a week ago, the Wall Street Journal had a long article discussing all the policy failures of New York. But Andrew Cuomo was held up as this great hero for a short while other, you know, there were two articles I saw in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I think there was one in the Washington Post. There was one in The Guardian, even from England, on South Dakota about this strange idea of not putting all sorts of restrictions in place and attacking Governor Noem for these things, like she was doing something not just a policy failure, but something wicked. And I think as the policy differences have come about, how there are numerous policy failures in New York. While I was, there was someone who writes for The Atlantic who said when Rick DeSantis in Florida was opening the beaches that he was literally killing people, and that hasn't happened, that maybe she's picking up something that the media was choosing to emphasize some things and not emphasize other things, and that there's kind of a preordained narrative that they were pushing. But there's certainly, I think, with this kind of this media strategy by Kristi Noem and her, I assume it's part of a team effort here. One doesn't get on all these shows by accident and produce, you know, well-produced videos by accident, that they're trying to push a couple narratives. One is that Kristi Noem did the right thing, that South Dakota is better off for her less aggressive response to COVID, that South Dakota has a way of life that's worth defending, and Kristi Noem will defend it. And thirdly, there's within that this attack on the media, which she feels, I think with some accuracy, turned her into a boogeyman, or I guess it would be boogeywoman, I suppose that would be, in this case, this figure of criticism. And she's reacting to that, and I think so. It's part of this overall strategy of trying to, I think, maybe reintroduce Kristi Noem, both certainly to South Dakota, but also there's something to be said here that it seems like there's a national reach that she's trying to have, which is interesting.
Right, and you mentioned Governor Andrew Cuomo. Now New York City has 8.4 million people. South Dakota has 880,000. I'm getting those numbers slightly off, but you know, Governor Noem said from the beginning, and Tom Dempster, I want to bring you into this conversation now. She said from the beginning, we are not New York. And in interview after interview, she does point out the attention that Governor Cuomo has gotten for New York and the lack of storytelling about South Dakota. Tom, what do you want to say about the sort of the media strategy on a nationwide level of Governor Noem punching back and saying this narrative is not fair?
Well, I mean, Lori and John, I mean, it's really interesting. I don't know of a single politician that hasn't complained about media treatment. If you're a surfer, you're going to complain about high waves. If you're a South Dakotan, you're going to complain about a long winter. It's just part and parcel. It's just part of the beast for sure. But as I listen to particularly the Breitbart interview, thank you, John, for that. But as I listened to that, it was Walter Mondale who said, you know, when you're in politics, you're always going to get a ton of snowballs, and it's your responsibility as a politician to take those snowballs, put a rock in the middle of the snowball, and return it. And Governor Noem's strategy, and she's very, very good at this. She's very good at judo, because when the media would say something, she's going to take that alleged weakness and use it for her own strength. And she's taken that platform now with a national audience. I agree, John, as if one is seeking a national constituency, it takes the strength of the opponent, devours it, and makes it your own. It seems to me that on stations like Breitbart, they claim that the media is unfair to you or slanted in a certain direction is a bit like calling the pot black. But she's very good at taking the criticism and leveraging it and bouncing back from it and making it her strength. Watch and see.
John Schaaf mentioned this YouTube video that the governor's office produced, and it is entitled Lessons Learned from COVID-19. You can find it on YouTube, and we're going to play a little clip from that, John, and I ask you, because part of this, you know, a lot of people are trying to figure out if Governor Noem has a national political ambition, which she has been written about, and she has been pretty strong in saying, you know, I'm governor of South Dakota. And here's a little bit from that YouTube clip that kind of explains perhaps another strategy about why she's reaching out in a national way to highlight what's happening in the state.
To the builders, the producers, and the essential workers scattered throughout the country, if you've seen how South Dakota has managed this pandemic and you like what you've seen, come to South Dakota. To those professionals who will be working from home permanently, if you value our way of life, where people love freedom, smaller communities, and lots of wide open spaces, I want you to think about doing your work from a new home in South Dakota. And to business owners in other states who are frustrated that your business was forced to close, South Dakota has the friendliest tax and regulatory system in the nation. We didn't order businesses to close. We trusted them to innovate and to continue serving their customers. And we'd love for you to do your business here as well. South Dakota truly is open for business. Now, not all governors trusted their people, but I did. Different paths mean people have different choices, and South Dakota chose common sense solutions. If you want freedom, personal responsibility, and a government that works for you, rather than dictates to you, South Dakota is the place to get it.
John Schaaf, she says in one of the interviews that the state is getting phone calls or people who are interested in moving their businesses here or relocating here. Talk a little bit about this broader call to say, you know, she specifically mentions in her video that, you know, New York City and Silicon Valley might empty out a little bit. I'm not sure I've heard that anywhere else, but she says it's possible, and if so, consider South Dakota.
Well, you know, I think anyone who's done anything in sales, fundraising, or politics knows at a certain point you have to make the ask. Whether it's buy my product, make that donation, or vote for me, you have to make the ask. And I would say Kristi Noem is making the ask. When she said when she ran for governor, and Sheree has repeated it in this video that you just played, and then I think in the interview, I think with Breitbart, South Dakota is open for business, right? That's one of her catchphrases. And she is asking people, not covertly, it is overt, come to South Dakota and do business. If you want a certain way of life, South Dakota is. So what she's trying to do is make this response, her response to COVID, I think sort of bouncing off what Tom was saying. She, you know, she got criticized for some of this stuff. Now she's making it a virtue. Say, hey, we do things differently here. And if you want low taxation, low regulation, and you know, a less urban way of life, South Dakota is the place to be. And she's not shy about saying that. And obviously this might be one reason why she's producing videos for YouTube, which, of course, can be seen by anybody, and going on national media, is that she's making this argument to the nation. And, you know, it might be for political purposes, but it could be, if we want to be less cynical about it, it just, you know, we don't sometimes people just mean what they say. And maybe what she really is doing is making the ask for South Dakota, come here and live our way of life, and this way of life is a good way of life.
Tom Dempster, in the same YouTube video, she talks about going out with her family to the Black Hills and how there were license plates on cars from all over the country, and it's the most beautiful place, which sounds like a tourism ask as well. And, you know, a stark contrast to places that are shut down. She says, come here. Everybody else is. What are your thoughts about this message and the risks involved, Tom, of sort of declaring victory in a state that, you know, had to withstand the national scrutiny over the Smithfield plant? We've got fireworks coming up on the 4th of July. We've got a modified rally in Sturgis coming up. The national attention might be on her in the future. Is it too soon, Tom, to sort of declare that we've figured this out?
Well, yeah, just to step back a bit, I mean, very savvy, very smart, very articulate judo, for sure. My daughter lives in Los Angeles and just came home to South Dakota last night on a packed flight, by the way. Nobody in the mid-seat, but there wasn't a spare seat on the airplane. When she told somebody in the Los Angeles airport where she was going, the response was, oh, I wish I could move there. But equally so, there were two people who sat behind her where the stewardess had to come and twice say, put on your masks. My daughter had two children with her. Both of them had their masks on 100% of the time. And they were abusive to my daughter, Jenny, for imposing those masks upon her. That's my worry. That's my concern. I think we're calling victory way too soon. Governor Noem was very candid in saying this is a marathon. This marathon, in everybody's opinion, is not over. What? We're maybe at our fourth or our fifth mile. We have many, many, many more miles to go. Not that anybody asked me, but I would love to say, I would love to hear something like, here in South Dakota, we take COVID seriously, and in the name of what, freedom and liberty and the personal responsibility that engenders, we wash our hands, we keep our distance, and we wear masks in public so we don't have to shut down our economy. I'm troubled when you take a look at statistics, when you take a look at studies about what happens when you reopen, when you look at the dramatic fall in our COVID cases that we in this country have not had, it's playing with fire.
And John Schaff, earlier in that Breitbart conversation, we don't have that audio right now, but the host, Alex Marlowe, asks about masks and calls it a sort of the media decided masks were fashionable a few weeks into this, and then the narrative changes. And Governor Noem doesn't directly address that. She doesn't come back and say what she feels about masks after that question, but there is certainly this sort of back and forth about what does a mask stand for, John. And I also want to ask you, John Schaff, you can expand on that or this idea of what the national media story should be, especially including places like New York where there are policy failures and successes. The Columbia University, which is in New York, that report that they released saying, tens of thousands of lives could have been saved if social distancing measures had been implemented just a few weeks sooner. And you remember President Trump called them a liberal, disgraceful institution. So John, what does she want the national media to be covering?
Well, this is what I mean is that you have various narratives. And there's a reason why institutions are held in disrepute. And so, for example, we now know, because Dr. Fauci admitted it yesterday, that he basically said, yes, we lied to America when we said you don't need to wear masks and masks actually don't help because we were afraid that people would buy up all the masks and medical professionals wouldn't be able to get them. Instead of saying medical professionals need these masks, even though they help, please don't buy them up, they chose to tell an untruth to the American people. And so you can forgive people for being somewhat angry when there was a time when the WHO and the national government said masks don't help, and now there's kind of a social stigma behind not wearing a mask. Well, that's two different things, and so people are going to be distrustful. And so people are going to be distrustful when someone like Andrew Cuomo is held up as a hero. And, within a week of closing down New York, he, the mayor of New York, the health commissioner of New York City, were saying, go out, go to plays, go to Chinese New Year festivals. There's nothing to worry about. And then, within, say, 3 weeks, the exact opposite is happening. And so I don't think that anybody has held themselves up within this crisis and ensuing crisis like political disorder and protests and riots. It seems like there's nobody who asks who acts, whether it's politicians or news media, in a trustworthy, straightforward way that everybody, whether it's Andrew Cuomo, Kristi Noem, maybe Donald Trump, they've got their agenda, and sticking to that agenda is more important than telling the people what they need to hear. And in this case, I'd say probably Kristi Noem has done better than most national politicians. Though, like Tom, I think we talked about this many weeks ago when we had we're reopened for, I forget what was the catchphrase now, that when we were reopening, 5-6 weeks ago.
Back
to normal. And my point then was, how about back to less weird? Because we don't really want to go back to normal, as Tom says, and sometimes that message is missing, that these aren't normal times.
And I'm wondering, John, though, about, and we need to move on to policing if we're going to make sure that we cover that a little bit here with what's happening in Sioux Falls. But the idea of saying, you know, the national media agenda is sort of like lumping Cuomo and Noem in the same bucket and saying they're politicians. They've behaved very differently. Governor Noem closed schools before Governor Cuomo did. Throwing out the word national media or establishment media or the press or the media and saying they have an agenda and they're manipulating the narrative seems patently unfair to me, John.
Yet on the other hand, we know that national media is a small number of people. They are in a very geographically centered thing. We know, I was just reading this in the new book by Joel Kotkin, The Urbanist, they like 50% of national media people graduate from a very small handful of universities, right? And we know that we have all sorts of data on the national media that they are very unrepresentative of the public. They have views that are very unrepresentative of the general public. And you know, the social psychologist John Hyatt says there's one finding from psychology that is ironclad. You put people together who think alike, they will become more extreme than any individual member. And so when you've got a media that lives in very small geographic entities that has almost monolithic views on the world, who graduated from a small number of universities, that they are going to become more extreme than any individual member. And I don't think it's incorrect to say that it's a generalization, which in some cases will be false, but I think you can generally say that national media tends to have a certain view of the world, and that view ends up being portrayed in how they report the news.
Tom, well, how does it impact her relationship with local media? The constant saying that, you know, the press manipulates perceptions. Meanwhile, you live in a state and you represent the people from a certain state, and those journalists are responsible for reporting on you. Does this do damage to her relationship with the local press to spend so much time on national conservative outlets like Breitbart and Fox, and to slam how she's portrayed in the press so ardently? When people here in the state are covering South Dakota people's lives every day?
Whole different story. I mean, absolutely, cable and the internet has devoured the authority of what the New York Times used to have, of what the Washington Post used to have. It used to be CBS News, where Walter Cronkite would say, that's the way it is. Well, that's kind of not the way it is anymore. We've kind of gone back to where we were in the late 1900s, early 1900s, where newspapers, the Estelle Republican, whatever, named themselves after ideologies. Absolutely, Breitbart is that. South Dakota, I mean, I hearken back to the day, back to the days when we had the Wooster brothers, when we had the Steve Youngs, when we had the Dave Kranz. All of them were equally as skilled as, I don't know if you've heard of her, were equally as skilled and as good as Lori Walsh about asking questions. They're penetrating questions. They're good questions, and you never got away with anything. We have four or five maybe reporters in South Dakota that are still like that. It's awful nice to see what South Dakota News Watch. I mean, that harkens back to maybe the older days of journalism. I'm wondering, and I'm not certain what my point is, but I mean, I've always looked at the media as a fourth estate. They have always been my friend, because they are, as a politician, they were doing exactly the same thing that I was trying to do to make this a better place to be. Never looked at them as the enemy, but would often call a member of the news media and say, the story that you did about me was unfair. I just want you to know that.
Very briefly, before I let you go, let's touch base on policing in South Dakota and how that conversation is going. And we'll really just get the tip of the iceberg here. But this morning, Chief Matt Burns addressed the press in Sioux Falls, talking about reviewing policies in light of the protests and the events in Minneapolis where an officer killed George Floyd while he was in police custody. And here is how Chief Burns started out with their overview of what the Sioux Falls Police Department has been looking into regarding policy.
Since the tragic and senseless death of George Floyd in Minneapolis on May 25th, our department has undertaken a specific review of 8 key areas of our policy to ensure that they are in compliance with the law, best practices in our profession, and frankly, the expectations of the community we serve. These areas are the subject of police policy reform discussions nationally, and it is important to let everyone know that our policies are consistent with these discussions. The residents and visitors to our city can be assured that our officers' efforts to serve and protect them rest on a sound and responsible foundation. These 8 key areas are de-escalation techniques, chokeholds, also known as strangleholds, warning before shooting, exhausting reasonable alternatives before using deadly force, duty to intervene, shooting at moving vehicles, use of force continuum, and comprehensive reporting. I am pleased to inform you that our policies stand up well in these discussions, are lawful, and they're appropriate. I encourage anyone with questions about these or any policies of our department to either review them at the city website of siouxfalls.org or please contact us directly.
Again, that's the voice of Sioux Falls Police Chief Matt Burns addressing policing in South Dakota. And shortly after that, he was asked a question by a journalist in the room about a community advisory council and whether or not for complaints, because when you make a complaint in the Sioux Falls Police Department and the Minnehaha County Sheriff's Department, it goes to that officer's supervisor, Matt Burns said, and someone asked about a community advisory council. And here he listened to his response.
There is at the state level, there is the Law Enforcement Standards and Training Commission, which oversees the certification of officers across the state level. But as far as Sioux Falls, that is something that we're looking at as a part of a potential reform effort going forward.
How soon could something like that come into play?
Well, that kind of depends on the group that you draw from. I think that's something that's very reasonable, and we're going to study that. I don't want to put a timeline on it because there's a lot of factors that go into that.
So, John, the question here is the Sioux Falls Police Department, you know, looking at policy, saying, we're very happy and pleased to report that, all is well. And then when someone digs into a question, there's a little more hesitation about whether or not they're really prepared to think about community advisory groups or what will go forward. My question to you and Tom, briefly before we let you go, is, is the Sioux Falls Police Department understand what protesters are asking for? Are they missing the point, or are they on the right track here?
Well, I think in response to protests over the last handful of weeks, I think the police force has done what you want them to do, which is review what they're doing. And partially they're going to have to respond to state initiatives. I don't know if you're aware. Yesterday the president released an executive order, which now the Department of Justice is going to be putting out some regulations on local police forces that local police forces will have to respond to. I think that's a step in the right direction. From what I heard, the chief is not saying no to a community board. It sounds like he's not saying yes yet. But I don't know. I have no opinion on community boards. I can't imagine an argument against them, but I also haven't thought about it much. But I also don't know that it's the sine qua non of reform that you must have community boards, but also it seems like it's a reasonable request.
Tom Dempster, before we let you go, anything that you think law enforcement agencies in South Dakota, police agencies, are going to really need to be looking hard at in the days ahead as far as making changes, or do you think they're just sort of waiting for things to go back to less weird?
I don't think so. I mean, one of the things that I enjoy about the mayor is his ability to stand in front of a microphone and, frankly, to show a little bit of angst, to show a little bit of uncertainty, but certainly to show concern. I trust that kind of response. I trust that we don't have all the answers, but we are certainly experiencing this pain along with every resident in Sioux Falls, and that we will do everything that we possibly can to find and seek the cure. We don't have ready answers. Ready answers are not easy. We've only lived with this for some 350 years, and we'll continue to live with this, our dreams not quite being realized that everybody is equal. I think the angst can, the visible angst and pain can help us solve some problems.
We'll have more on this conversation later, I'm sure. Tom Dempster, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lori.
John Schaff, thank you as well. See you next time.
Thanks for having me on again.